Ladies and gentlemen, the Deep Thoughts. Today we are going to talk about remote viewing. For some of you, you will know exactly what remote viewing is. And for some of you, you're going to say, what's that? It's an extremely interesting concept. It is almost in every case hard to believe. It sounds like an ancient art. And it sounds as if anyone had this skill, they would be able to pretty much dominate the world with absolutely zero resistance. For any of you that watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure back in the day, there was a point in the script where these two guys, Keanu Reeves and the other dude, who I just saw in a Bitcoin documentary recently, if they needed something, they would remember to go back and put it underneath the rock or behind the bush or whatever. And they were able to go back in time, make that happen instantaneously. And so if they needed something, just remember to make sure they put it there. And all of a sudden it was there immediately, right? By the way, I'm smoking my cigar from my buddy Dan. Yes, it's Hoyo de Monterrey. Cuban. Beautiful cigar. But what is remote viewing? Okay, so let's catch up real quick. Because what's interesting about it is it's not terribly difficult for me to describe what it is, but it'll be probably fairly difficult, if you haven't heard of it before, for your brain to grasp and accept it to the level of which you're willing to watch an episode for an hour about it, right? If you're completely virgin on this. As the story goes, the United States government discovered that in secret, the Russians had started this program first through a series of training techniques. A human being is able to view, sitting down, wide awake, eyes wide open, other parts of the world. You can not only see, it's pretty much every conceivable viewing apparatus that you could imagine. You can view the past, you can view the present, you can view the future. You could view a city, a location, as minutely down as you possibly want, supposedly down to subatomic particles, and all the way out to seeing the entire universe. One is able to achieve mind-reading techniques, a little bit of the Dreamscape movie back in the 80s, which also is a great film. The story goes is that in the 70s, the CIA finds out about this situation created by the Ruskies. And so they put a lot of money into this and created a project called Stargate. Stargate, and all the project names, there's tons of project names. Dragoon Absorb? Here's for your reptilian people. Dragoon Absorb. Swear to God. David Icke should jump on that. But it's computer-generated project names as we understand it. We start, you know, getting people who've defected to tell us what the hell's going on. Depending on who you talk to, it's a 5-step program, it's an 8-step program, it's a 6-step program, so we don't know. I'm going to explain how this thing has been explained to me in terms of how it works. Then we'll both be skeptics on how it could work and whether or not we're all doing it a little bit already. But the CIA ramps up this project. You get a black budget, and we start pulling in totally random people that have very sophisticated open minds, and then people that are actually psychic. Now, psychics and remote viewing people, there's this big effort to make sure that you don't get the two confused. Because remote viewing does not require any psychic abilities. It does not require any out-of-body experience. As a matter of fact, if you do have an out-of-body experience, you may or may not be remotely in the realm of remote viewing, right? Again, I think I said a long time ago in an episode, I was working with a guy that said his girlfriend was telling him that she was having out-of-body experiences, astral projection, every single night that they were together. And I said, okay, well then do me a favor. I said, do you have a dresser? He said, yeah. I said, take a sweater, something, put it in the top dresser, maybe even just a random object, put it in the top drawer of the dresser, shut the door, tell her that night, astral project into that top drawer and see what the hell you put in there and see if she can figure it out. I'm like 18 years old. That was the end of her claims. It's funny how these attention whores are so easily caught. But here's the thing. So the government of the United States of America, and again, I don't think we have the numbers from the Russian government, but they were claiming over 80% accuracy for remote viewing. And again, this could be just like Ghostbusters, you know, where there's the very beginning of the movie, they're flipping up cards and trying to figure out what color things are. So let's get into how it's done. So I'm going to tell you how they do it, as according to their training. And then we're going to examine sort of all of the theories that I profess on this show about how the universe is put together and how it works. And then we're going to bring them together and see if we can explain something. Now, according to them, the main secret is just to simply be told that you can do this, which is very interesting. It's kind of open your mind sort of thing. The first thing they say to you is, okay, look, you have your conscious mind and you have your unconscious mind. You're going to have to be aware of what your conscious mind is going to be doing during this process and what the unconscious mind is going to do in the process. You know, when you think of conscious and unconscious or subconscious, you don't sit around controlling your subconscious very often. It's down there like the molten lava underneath the 9/11 buildings, right? Just does what it does till you dig it up and you find it. And so when you're going for an image or you're getting into this kind of thing, you're going to be excited to see it work, right? And it's probably the worst state of mind, because as your consciousness gets excited, you know, you're starting to put a lot of subject matter into your brain. You're envisioning perhaps what you're going to see. Maybe some people will envision being a superhero in 2 months because they can do this, so that they can have all the parties where they're going to impress people. You cloud your consciousness. And so the first thing they want you to do is to meditate 10 to 20 to 30 minutes a day, multiple times a day, in a quiet place with very little sound. Meaning you don't have, like my situation, where cars drive by that are hot rods, motorcycles drive by. Wind is blowing on me right now, of course, because I'm doing a show. I set this whole thing up again, not a single puff of wind, and then Mother Nature gets all excited. But the meditation is for you to quiet your active consciousness and let the subconscious take over, because eventually your consciousness will go to sleep. Another way to do that, which is a little more brutal, is to stay up really, really late, way beyond your normal hours of consciousness. Then your left brain goes to sleep, your right brain takes over, and you'll have a lot more kind of control of chaos. But don't worry about that particular technique. So what they tell you is, look, if we say we want you to view a particular location or a particular thing, and we give you too many details, then you will envision what you already suspect you're searching for, and your consciousness will grab fabricated history, real history, and shove it into basically a composite layer of cameras, right? So if you think about editing software on a computer, we take, you know, a green screen is the back and the person's in front, and then when we push that together, we replace the green screen with something else. So it's a big layering mechanism. And what they want to make sure is that you don't put any layers in out of creativity or just habit. You know, the big examples would be if I said envision the pyramids from Giza. Now we're going to look inside the pyramids of Giza. The problem with me pre-populating your brain with that exact location is that if you're a buff in Egyptology, you've seen a documentary, you've read a book, or et cetera, et cetera, you're going to automatically start imagining things. You might even imagine, you know, alien stories or whatever your current philosophy is. You'll mix and match. So they need a way to get you to those coordinates on the surface of the planet without a predisposition of what you're going to see. So how do they do it? Well, according to them, it's almost, it's like a ridiculous technique. Okay. Most of you are familiar with longitude and latitude coordinates. When you see the sphere of the Earth, you'll see lines that go up and down around the sphere and lines that go left and right. Same thing on a flat map, not a flat Earth map, but a flat map. And so we've got a coordinate system we've built from the center point at the North Pole all the way down to the bottom point on the South Pole. And so we give you a longitude and latitude coordinate. For those of you who watched the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the message within the song was all about where to go, which ended up being Devil's Tower. So according to the remote viewing community, they give you a longitude-latitude coordinate, which is usually some gigantic number. Any of you fiddle with Google Maps, you know how big these coordinates are. We're talking probably 7 to 8 digits of accuracy for 2 separate digits with a decimal floating point in there. Now, supposedly, with someone having absolutely no knowledge of longitude-latitude coordinates, any orientation whatsoever, these candidates were able to discover where they were and start seeing stuff. Already sounds pretty fishy, right? Again, I don't think the universe has a longitudinal, latitudinal system, but it somehow recognizes it at an atomic level, right? Sure, you can always arbitrarily measure something, but in terms of the fabric of the universe being embedded into the mind of man and having it be some lookup table that man, meaning mankind, can use to look up a location just seems super far-fetched. However, there might be a link we're going to get into between other people who actually know what that coordinate system is, and you might be bouncing your consciousness off them knowing it's a pyramid. So I think that, quite frankly, remote viewing and ESP and just normal proximity of human beings could be a very dangerous mix. It's almost like you have to triple, double, quadruple blind the experiment, get someone in a warehouse completely out of proximity of another human being, and then what you get would be real. So now here's the game. They give you longitudinal, latitudinal coordinates. Latitudinal, I don't even know if that's real. Longitude, latitude coordinates, and you start seeing images. Now what'll start happening is you get what's called the Gestalt. You hear me talk about this on a show a lot. It's a German word for the single image that's worth 1,000 words. A gestalt, I think, comes with an emotional capture as well as a visual capture of what you're seeing. For any of you who've seen the movie Brainstorm back in the day with Christopher Walken, as they had this VR tape that was recording your entire body's spectrum of senses, it would be one spliced second of that reel would be your gestalt. This cigar has proven to be one of the most difficult cigars I've ever smoked in my life. Jesus. It canoed badly and quickly. It probably canoed about 30 minutes worth of smoking in about 5 minutes. Now, from that point forward, there's several very specific techniques that start to occur. One, they've developed this symbolic alphabet for symbols such that one does not have to illustrate something in its entirety. You can just write certain symbols down. Instead of writing lake, L-A-K-E, and be burdened with 4 letters of construction during this viewing process, they have a little looped line. Of course, mountains, plains, homes, they have all kinds of little shorthand symbols for everything. Maybe it is shorthand, I don't know. But what that does is that keeps the consciousness in flow. And keeps the consciousness out there where they're supposed to be viewing and not worried about the paperwork right in front of them. If you were to concentrate too much on the room that you're in, you literally lose connection with where you're sort of projecting your viewing apparatus inside your brain. Now, a lot of times it has to do with seeing a location and you sort of get these just snapshots of where you're looking. Jim Mars, who is sort of a, I think he's sort of a novelist, right? Novel as in a joke and novel as in writing a book. And I don't mean to discredit him by saying a joke. He's put together one of his best books I've ever read is The Rise of the Fourth Reich. I think he was dead on in that book in a lot of areas. And we've been able to prove that, well, at least we think we've seen proof that he's very correct about, you know, Nazis fleeing to Argentina and what have you. And I was watching some video the other day. It was like maybe it was a, I think it was a interview with Mel Brooks and Dick Cavett. And he said, well, you know, they all fled to Argentina. And this is a Jewish director who's very brilliant, who wrote the producers where they did this Hitler musical. So you seem like he would know. And, he just said it was a joke. But the story that Jim Mars tells is that he had written a book about remote viewing. And I think it was supposed to be published in 1995. And he said that when his book was submitted for review, it, you know, passed all the law, the legal references, it passed its literary edit, but he had at the same time someone coming out saying that remote viewing was complete crap in the press, kind of the subdermal press, and then his book was canceled. So here it is, you know, any publisher looking at a finished book on the table, written by a renowned author / reporter, gumshoe kind of guy, it's worth money. It's worth money just sitting on the table. Just release the book, do a conservative run. He even said there was pre-sales for his book, and they canceled it. And so sometimes that happens for stupid reasons. I've worked on video games that were canceled, and someone might, you know, want to throw a conspiracy in there. But, you know, in the end, what we didn't admit to the public was that the guy who was designing the game didn't know how to design a game. And even though the artist made the most beautiful thing we've ever seen, it just couldn't get finished because the talent didn't exist internally. But he says, you know, look, it was as if someone didn't want this information out there. Maybe he had done an excellent job of recreating the steps of learning how to do this. And then, if it's really easy to do, and it's very dangerous to have everyone being able to see, and, you know, certain douchebags' brains will... Area 51's at risk, S4's at risk, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is at risk, any place something secret's going on, it's at risk. The Pentagon, you know. Imagine 9/11 being remote viewed before it happened. And we find out all the scumbags that you know, pulled that off. So the process essentially continues through different metrics of what you see, you write it down, you compare notes. And, of course, in your training process, they're giving you things that they already know. And so, and again, it would have to be utterly triple, double, quadruple blinded, meaning if they had like a lockbox, you know, one of Al Gore's lockboxes, and it always has the apple in it, and they keep running students through, and they're waiting for the students to come up with apple. Well, the problem is the instructors know it's an apple. The students can read it off the instructor's brain and get an accurate reading, when all they're doing is reading minds in the room, because human beings exchange knowledge without talking. This has been very proven. One of the most simple experiments is people touching foreheads for, I think, about 15 to 30 minutes. And then they're separated into RF-proof rooms, radio frequency-proof rooms, and they can still read each other's minds. When one person's talking to someone else or seeing a giant photograph of something, the other one knows what they're seeing. It breaks off very quickly, right? There's also mention and that the relevance of your brain waves is very important, which is why Stanford University assisted the CIA in creating this, supposedly, right? Hate to implicate any university if this is all just hearsay. But supposedly this is all above ground stuff. And again, I'm not revealing any major secrets at all. We're going to have more fun than most folks in this subject matter by talking about how the universe is put together. But you know, when you go to sleep, you go into, I think it's alpha, beta, which creates the random eye movement. You know, your eyes flickering quite a bit, and they say that's really where you have your dreams. And then you go into delta, and you start to not dream anymore, and you start getting that satisfying sleep. According to Star Trek, you got to have REM too. So you got to have all these different stages, which is, again, a big question as to why we dream and what the hell going to bed at night is all about. We'll save that for the other show. But there's a deeper frequency called theta. And they say that if you can get your consciousness down to theta, or you get into your subconscious at theta, you start to have higher and higher accuracy levels of seeing everything in the universe. Now, this all seemed a little hokey to me until one woman I saw, and Jim had said this too, but one woman had explained seeing the future. And then all of a sudden, her descriptions click with me on a personal level, because I think that one of my tricks, personal tricks for being creative, and this is could be creative in an algorithmic manner, could be a design thing, could be writing a story, writing a screenplay. I see the future. It may not be my future verbatim, but I am seeing a future. And it's been this way since I was a kid, and I'll link this to an interesting other person you know who says the same thing. But when I teach creativity in school, this is the way I do it. I tell someone, I said, look, imagine you know me personally. All of you have seen my face on this YouTube channel. And then all of a sudden I come into your place of business or your home, And I know you, I have permission to approach you, and I rush up to you, and I'm slightly older, you can just tell, my hair is perhaps gray instead of blonde, you know, and I'm excited, and you feel my energy, and you're like, ooh, this is kind of cool, look at Mark, man, he's all excited. I'm like, hey, you got to come with me right now, and you're like, okay, what are we doing? You won't believe me until you see it. You trust me, right? Yeah. And again, you can kind of see I'm a little older somehow. I like that distinction because it has a little more spin to the story. I take you outside. I have got a flux capacitor attached to the latest 2016 DeLorean, which looks amazing. And you're like, what the hell is this? And I say, it's a time machine. Let's go. Hop in. The butterfly doors are up. You hop in. You're kind of excited just to take a ride, even if I'm full of crap. But inside, just like Doc, all those gadgets are in there, the timeline's in there, and I'm dialing it up. And I say to you, look, you affected the future in a way that no one ever saw it coming. And it was, what you've done has been just phenomenal. And I'm going to show you. You're partially responsible for this car that could travel into the future. You interested? You say yes. I take you in the car. I push all the right buttons. Flash. Boom. We're in the future. It's not quite as intense as you thought. It's 10 or 12 years in the future. But things are different. You can just start to see that this sort of futuristic world we've all fantasized about is sort of coming to fruition. You know, old buildings aren't gone or anything, and people aren't wearing completely space-aged, you know, Raelian clothing, but something's different. And I start taking you to this kind of center place in the city, sort of like a park where there seems to be a festival or something going on. Park the car around back. There's some big buildings you haven't seen before obstructing your view. You can hear some excited people around the corner. And we've got about a 50-foot walk from the car to the edge of this building where you turn the corner. I guess for some reason we can't take the car there. We hop out of the car. You realize you just traveled into the future. You're not even sure how many years. Probably better if I said maybe 100 years, and then shit's really different, right? But we're going up this corner, and I say, look, you changed this. You're going to see what you did. Come on, let's go. And now we're kind of walking quickly, just out of excitement, to the edge of that building, and we're going to turn the corner. I say, it's just right around the corner. What you did is right around the corner. You're going to see it. This is awesome. And I'm taking you. Every single step, you get closer to the corner of that building, knowing that when you turn the corner and you look, you're going to see what you did. It's personalized. It's you did this, not anyone else did this. And so you start to think to yourself, well, Jesus, who am I? What do I know? Whether you're a housewife or a super scientist or whatever, what did I do to make this happen? And you start searching in your brain. You go to your subconscious. You go to your existential insides. You access the delta. You access the theta. You access everything that is your mind's eye, which is where this talent exists. Before you make the turn around the corner, I assure you that to the degree you can role play this in your brain, and feel free to do this every day of your life, several times a day, you will already have a vision, possibilities, if nothing more than just a thread and what you're capable of doing to go around the corner and see it. But you will see it before you see it. You will see the finished product. Now, you're not going to see, maybe, its full detail, its full luster, its exact purpose. But inside yourself, you'll, one, have a tremendous amount of faith in who you are all of a sudden. If you didn't already have it, if you already have it, it'll be even more jacked up and more amazing. And the way I tell the students is I say, look, stop right there. Right when you get to the edge of the building, the corner blocks, stop. What do you see? I just go through all the students. What do you see? And, you know, what's funny is the students will usually lose sight of me in the process. They'll sort of kind of start staring at the ceiling, staring into oblivion, and they're seeing their mind's eye. They've stopped using their eyeballs completely in this process. That little trick is pretty much exactly where the remote viewing community wants you. Stop seeing the room. Start looking into your mind's eye. Start seeing what's there. A lot of you already have this talent to look into your mind's eye. But you have to regulate your consciousness, infecting your subconsciousness, such that your knowledge in this world, what's in the room with you, maybe previous conversations just right before you get to this remote viewing exercise, is pretty much shut completely out. Now, in this particular example, I'm feeding you with the idea that there's this thing you did. But by me never telling you what that was, not even a category, whether it's music or art or architecture or science, I'm leaving it to you. You got to search your own brain. But the beautiful thing is it's beautiful, whatever you did. Now, when I write any of the films that I write, I get into the story in my brain, and it just lives in my brain. I'm seeing the future of this story. Perhaps I'm seeing the past if it's an historical piece. And the trick is to constantly see it, almost like Nostradamus claimed to see the future, and to actually write it down accurately. For any of you who've ever been artists, and you see the image of what you want to draw in your brain, but you struggle to get it on paper, you know, even my good friend Sid Mead struggles with that, and he paints photographs. I mean, he paints, any of you have seen Blade Runner, Tron, or any of the stuff he's ever done, he sits and goes into this sort of mind's eye technique to find out what he's looking for. And again, the guy draws 1,000 sketches before he finishes any design for anything. So if you hire him for a spaceship, he's going to have 1,000 doodles of what that spaceship could have looked like. Just keeps drawing and drawing from his brain and then illustrating it on paper to figure out what a turn looks like, da da da. And he always finds excellence, because he keeps going back in to look in the future until he finds the future. That's why the movie title Visual Futurist was invented by him, out of his brain, given to Hollywood for Blade Runner, and I believe even Tron. And it's now become a common title for folks in Hollywood who draw futuristic things for films. Last year, I had an epiphany with some hardware design. And the way it went was I kept looking at how certain hardware configurations were being used to create imagery. And I just kept looking at it, and I kept having this feeling in my chest of, this is fucking stupid. The way that they do this is just stupid. This is old paradigm thinking. We need to get past this. I started looking the way the data was being transferred between hardware, and I'm literally crawling out of bed. And I'm sort of, it's early, so I'm sort of, you know, I got to be in L.A. by 9 o'clock, you know, which from Orange County is a good drive. Got to get ready before I go. And just crawling out of bed, I just saw through my floor. I saw through my reality into this other reality, and the finished product was staring right at me. Total epiphany of invention, hardware invention. I've now documented that, submitted that to my investors. They've had it vetted by dozens of people, and they're like, holy shit, this changes the whole game. It reduces costs, it reduces heating, it reduces failure rates, and simplifies the entire stream of data to create this imagery. Cool, right? Now, you guys are thinking about what I did. In your mind's eye, you're trying to read my brain. See how that works? The reason why I take you on this little side digression is because I believe remote viewing is something we all do. Every day, all the time. Now, perhaps people who brush with the extra, you know, Sensodyne fluoride toothpaste, perhaps they don't do it very well. People who toxify themselves with things. Yeah, maybe you interfere with your third eye and that thus makes you more docile and sort of useless to society. Again, hopefully if you watch this show, you've detoxified. You've watched the toxins episode. You've watched the cancer episode. And you're starting to live a little bit of a different life. But I went through this process probably for about almost 40 years. Just doing this since I was a kid. Bah, bah, bah. And I think all of us have done it. And I'm not special. You've all done it too. You just may not have put a name on it, right? And then I'm listening to Michael Jackson interview. Coincidentally, he and I have the same birthday, by the way. Pretty cool. 58 was a good year for geniuses being born, let me tell you. And he said, you know, the way I write music is I just envision it being complete. I do my best to pull that completed song into my reality, and then we make music. And obviously, he had a pretty good success rate, right? I used to wonder, you know, Elvis Presley never wrote any lyrics. I don't even think he wrote any of his songs. People, you know, he's the king of rock and roll. Okay. Elton John never wrote any lyrics, but he wrote the music to lyrics. Interesting. Or he'd write the song and someone else would write the lyrics, right? So all that credit he gets for writing, you know, all of his songs, well, those are someone, it's one guy who writes all of his lyrics. And so they had a great team together. It's great. Just like musicals are written, right? So I was under the impression that Michael Jackson was probably one of these kind of guys. He's surrounded by Quincy Jones and all these amazing artists. And I thought, well, maybe Michael's just really a talented performer and I should look for the people that really make it all happen. Now, of course, there are people that are amazing that help to make things happen. But then I watched interview after interview of him writing music and beatboxing. Michael could beatbox, and he was totally different than anyone else. And he has all these sound libraries from his mouth that I've never heard anyone really do. And he integrates it into his songs, right? Little pops and snaps and hee-hees and all that kind of stuff. But when I heard him say it, I was like, oh my God, what are the odds that a guy's born the same day I am, relatively throughout the year, right? This arbitrary thing we do with birthdays. And he's doing this habitually, and he encourages other people to do it. So how could this possibly work? How could we possibly see the future? I mean, you might say, well, it's your imagination, man. All right. Imagination is the idea that your subconscious is always fiddling like, you know, a bunch of elves working for Santa, and that you just merely, through wavelengths of thought, you essentially open the doors like Get Smart, and you just keep going into your subconscious deeper and deeper and deeper until you can see what you're already creating. If that's never really sat well with you, then I think we're on to a good conversation, right? Now, I've done episodes on gravity where I tell you, you know, ethereal winds are gravity. It's a push, not a pull. You know, which is why Big Bang can't be what it is. There's nothing on the outside to push in an absolute singularity vacuum model, right? We have folks that tell us that the universe is built out of frequencies, which it definitely has infinite vibrations going on constantly. And that we're merely, we are the radio, the apparatus, the DNA double helix antenna chain that accesses it just like a radio. You just turn to a channel and you listen. I'm sure there's some truth to that. I'm sure there is. But what's the sort of subatomic reality of that notion? Because that sounds like an easy way just to claim something and walk away from all the science that's actually making it take place, right? Now, if I said, if I had left out the fact that you can see the past and see the future, then we would be stuck in the now, which is really the only time that exists, is now. And if I said, okay, what's in that lockbox now? And you were able to see it, well, then you would have pretty much a model in your brain where you're going, okay, that makes sense to me. That really exists right now. I'm going to, you know, use frequencies to put my mind's eye into the box and see what's there. But it exists. It really is there. And so if you want to think about how to sort of reach through the chaos of colliding particles and colliding frequencies, and you're essentially just filtering all the frequencies that you see with your senses until you just isolate the frequencies that come out of the box. You know, you've seen these things where, noise cancellation is a really good example. I shot a video last year. No, I shot a video this year, as a matter of fact, where the room wasn't quiet. It had a sort of generator running. The cameraman could not get the sound right because he didn't bring the right equipment. And so I had a lot of fuzz on the track that needed to be erased. And so I brought it into Audition in Photoshop, in the CSS suite from Adobe. I took a sample of the noise, and then they have the software that will cancel that noise out of the sound wave of the rest of the recording. And it worked unbelievably. It worked instantly, and it was perfect. It was really just phenomenal how great that product is. But what they're doing is they're subtracting the delta of that frequency, looking for that frequency within the spectrum of sound that's going on in the file, right? Well, you and I have that ability for every sense that exists, whether or not we understand it exists or not. Like I said in the Infinite Senses episode, we really do have an infinite level of senses, because for any sense that you can put your finger on, just like a number set that goes up forever and down forever in the negative space, and then it's subdivided forever, right? There's infinite numbers between 0 and 1. Because of fractional references, right? So in order to see what's in the box, you merely subtract out. Like if it's here in this kind of randomly windy day, I got helicopters flying over, cars driving by, dogs barking a couple blocks away, I would just subtract all that sound. And if there's a little, you know, almost infinitely quiet music box going inside this other box, I can't hear it unless I subtract out all that sound. You do that. And you do this in crowds all the time. Someone's talking to you in a loud crowd. You subtract all the noise in the crowd. You look at their lips and you hear the sound and you start to focus on your friend. And you can hear what they say. But at first you couldn't. Even if it's just a split second, it was all mishmash in your brain. It was a crowd making noise, right? That subtraction, that delta of reality, is what remote viewing is built out of, in my opinion. Now, the genius of being able to do that, even in a crowd, my little example that we've all done, is pretty phenomenal. There's something huge going on in our ability to, I think, again, have a soul and have a body. It's not a Christian soul, it's not a Jewish soul, it's not an Arab, you know, Allah soul, Muslim soul, anything like that. It's just, it's what you are. The complex energy that gives you identity, right? The other one is having the belief that breaks the paradigm that you can't do this. You know, like I said in a previous episode recently, every day that we are alive, your brain is closed by learning about paradigms. There are rewards for recognizing anything in the world. If I didn't recognize this thing I'm sitting on as a chair, I would never sit on it. I would never realize I could get relief from my body standing up, but I recognize it as a chair. If you take that to an existential level and you say, I need to recognize the fact that I have the capability of thinking, right? I think, therefore I am. It's the huge, what is it, Descartes that said that, right? It gives us power. It gives us ability. It gives us a distinction. And once you gain a new tool in the world, you gain pretty much an infinite spectrum of what you can do with that tool. If I never learned how to talk, think about how much of my life would disappear. If I didn't think I could hear, all that kind of stuff, right? But we think we need to take a step back and look at how information travels in the universe. Because we always view things, we acknowledge spatial associations between objects. I'm standing in a backyard. I can see a palm tree about 20 feet away from me. All right. Well, I think it's over there, and I'm over here. But let me just play with your brain for 1 second here. What if everything is a singularity? We are sitting on top of each other, and every object in the universe is right on top of each other. There really is only one particle. I know that's a screwball thing to think about here, right? Then your access to everything in the universe is totally conceivable all of a sudden, because everything that ever was is one thing. Now, probably, physically speaking, that's a bad analogy for how things are actually put together. But let's just say that everything is connected somehow. You know, I talked in the gravity episode, and I can't remember what episode after that, but the big question is whether or not the universe is a static object or a fluent object. Now, when we look at, again, a current in water, when you look down at the tub, when you pull the plug, and you see the swirl of water, or in your sink or whatever, you're acknowledging that swirl down there as a vortex, a little swirl. But if you drop dye, a colored dye, into that water supply, it goes down through the vortex and it disappears, but the vortex continues to exist. The substrate that is giving it its form is constantly in movement, and the force that is actually being exerted is also going down and becoming the velocity of the water shooting down the pipe. Things travel faster in vortexes. There's a lot of water filtration systems that use vortexes to energize water, to give it electrolytes and that kind of stuff, because they're infusing it with the energy that you're drinking. And this is per a buddy of mine who used to design those things. I've never seen that personally. So what are the other things that we are taught about the universe? We're taught that there are fixed velocities in time and space, right? The speed of light has always been given a designation, and they tell you that falsely that it's a constant in the universe, and it's absolutely not a constant in the universe. Even on planet Earth, universities have tracked the speed of light all over the place. And they also tell you that you can't go faster than the speed of light. Eric Dollard, in his basement in 1988 with the Borderland group he created down there, I think that's what they called it, he built a circuit right in front of your face, a longitudinal wave circuit that went 11 times the speed of light on camera, with the voltage meter counting how fast the circuit completed. Well, technically speaking, what he just did was impossible, because the first thing he built was a transverse wave, and it traveled about 80% the speed of light, which is about typical in a normal computer. But if they build computers with longitudinal waves, then you would have an instant transfer of information. And again, the analogy is if you and I held a rope between us, and I flip the rope and the wave goes to you, you can see the time required to get the wave to you. But if you and I held a broom pole, a big dowel of wood, and you got one and I got the other, and you push it, I push it, you instantaneously feel it on the other side. The whole thing has to happen at the same time. Well, if we think about the universe and all consciousness being more longitudinal than transverse, then you have instantaneous transfer information everywhere in the universe at all times, as long as you can get your consciousness down to these waves where that sort of information exists. For those of you Star Trek fans, you'll know about the tachyon. The tachyon is a theoretical particle that always travels faster than the speed of light. It's what these transmissions from the Enterprise to Earth are all about, you know, the sub-ether wavenet, you know, where you can send a message faster than speed of light back to Earth. Still takes some time on the show, because otherwise they wouldn't have any drama, you know, waiting for the message to come back. But we need to throw away fiction and simply say we can see the now, at least all around the world, instantly, all around the universe, instantly. Because information about those areas, about its construction, information about another person's feeling is instantaneously recognizable as long as you know what to look for. Like me looking for the chair to sit down in, you would tune your brain to see what you're looking for. We know that there are people that see auras. They see the emotional frequency coming off a human body, and those frequencies translate to colors in the visual cortex, if that's the way you choose to see it. And they can look at you and say, oh, you look really happy. Oh, man, what's wrong? You look really sad. They've tuned themselves to that. And the most deadly thing for man is if all men, you know, let's say 100,000 years ago, could see auras, because it was a sort of a mechanism prior to our elaborate language, right? If you don't have the vocabulary to express yourself, then the internals of your brain never developed that far, right? The second you increase your vocabulary, you start to figure out who you are. And the better your vocabulary, the better you learn who you are. And then the epiphany after that is finding someone else with an equally elaborate vocabulary that you can then converse with. Which is why when you talk to dumb people, you feel like you're dying. And when you talk to smart people, you feel like you're growing and living and blossoming like a rose. There's a handful of people in this world that when I talk to them, I feel like I'm alive. And it's not that I have all the answers or anything like that, or I'm showboating my brain. I'm just going, oh my God, this guy's overwhelming me, or this girl's overwhelming me with her intelligence. And this is great. I'm the student all of a sudden in the conversation, and there's nothing, no better feeling for me personally than that level of consciousness. Even when a random friend of mine just has an epiphany and tells me, oh, you know what, I was thinking, da-da-da-da, and it's something I never thought of. Man, it's a joy, right? So this is why I made the Infinite Senses episode, because, and reference this upcoming episode I was going to make, because I want you to understand our senses are so dumbed down in this world that remote viewing seems like magic, seems like a hocus-pocus story, but really, in the end, all you would be doing is acknowledging what you can actually access in this universe, aka see. Now, let's just say that you're able to get in touch with your I'm going to say astral projection, but your ability to see things that you haven't been able to see before that relate to sort of a remote viewing talent. Your challenge at that point is to see things that you don't understand at all. You know, if we had a life force in the universe that is something we really have never seen personally, perhaps a being that lives in pure consciousness, they don't have any instrumentalities whatsoever, like they said in Forbidden Planet, then your ability to conceive of them is very challenged. You're going to have some other existential thing here on Earth where you live to see them someplace else. And this is where we get to one of the other sort of stories that relates to remote viewing. And again, this is sort of fringy. I don't want to take a piss on this because it makes sense on one level. But people who remote view, and I'm going to leave astral projection out of this thing. We'll loop back to how you might see the future in the past. Is that they? Some folks have reported that they meet beings. And this is very similar to folks who've taken DMT. And I have not met a person who takes DMT raw that hasn't claimed to have met a race of beings that are sort of in that realm of consciousness. And DMT, you know, it's almost like a cheat, a cool cheat to get your third eye turned on to 11 and your consciousness sort of goes away. One of our listeners reported taking DMT, and this is a very common story if you read the DMT Dream Molecule book written by the researchers of the United States of America, taking, I believe, like I think it's like 1,200 milligrams shots of DMT. Their bodies, and I've seen the videos of this, by the way, their bodies really turn into sort of the bath salts people. And My explanation for that is that your consciousness, your soul, has now disengaged from your body, leaving your body this sort of autonomic system with very little consciousness left. I mean, you obviously have some sort of, you know, the Hindus call it the silver cord, but you have some connection with your body to return to your body. No one that I know of has taken DMT and just disengaged, you know, completely and died or something like that. But your body's left, and this could be what bath salts are doing to people as well. The body goes into a mega feral state and cannot speak language and is terrified of its surroundings. And that's where you see all these really horrific trips of people rolling around in their living rooms. Because, you know, I think you need your soul to actually see. And when your soul disappears to go off on some journey, the majority of it does, your body is really left in this chaotic state of absolutely horrific thought. But when you return to your body, you don't remember any of it because your consciousness is left. And so this marriage between folks that say they see this race of aliens, you know, some go as far as to say the gray aliens and they try to put it on it, but I think that again could be them superimposing their consciousness onto the scene. They say the aliens, you know, are very ambivalent, very friendly, very loving, but they always say, you can't stay here. One, because you don't have your body with you, and two, this is sort of our domain and you don't belong here. You know, we don't mind a couple visits, but don't make it a habit. One of my friends took a tremendous amount of DMT. Brilliant dude, man. He's invented a video game that almost everyone's played if you grew up in the 90s. He said he took his last trip of DMT because when he met his alien handler, eventually the handler got pissed, grabbed him by his shoulders and pushed his face against my buddy's face and said, you know, this is your last trip, man. Don't come back. I'm starting to get angry that you're abusing your privilege of doing this, which is a very interesting thing because he's smart enough to know that he didn't take DMT that last time fearing that this would happen, because if he did, then he could take responsibility for the context of what occurred in case he's imagining this, right? But he was expecting a great trip, excited to see his little buddy, his little alien buddy, and he was rejected. So the other half of this is that the remote viewers say that eventually these creatures that they see do get angry that they're there. And I've heard all kinds of stories about that, where people will take it in the living room and all of a sudden these beings are present in the room as if they are living a separate life in the same space. And there's sort of this feeling that you know, it's like two feelings. Oh, there's another one, meaning us, pushing into their world, and sort of the feeling of, why don't they just stay where they are? They're not supposed to be here. So you kind of get this unwelcome feeling sometimes, even on your first trip of DMT. So I don't know how you get the good ones and the bad ones. So be aware we might not be alone, and it may not be in a physical form that we are so used to, right? So let's loop back to this notion of being able to see the past and being able to see the future. Again, we live in a body that really only acknowledges the now. The only reason why we believe time exists is because we have the mechanism of memories, impressions that are, you know, you and I go to a baseball game together. You've got pictures in your brain, sounds in your game, feelings, tastes, everything. And you remember those. You just put them in some archive somewhere, using part of the universe as a database. Okay. So, the question is, I'm going to mix a couple things together here. There's Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I've talked about. And then there's a movie called Altered States with William Hurt. Hitchhiker's Guide went first, so let's talk about what he talked about. As a fictional, funny thing, he said that a scientist had figured out how to take a slice of fairy cake, which I think is an imaginary thing in itself, and he was able to extrapolate the entire history of the universe out through cause and effect, meaning one particle, it's another particle, it's another particle. And because that's all an algorithm of cause and effect, he was able to reverse engineer cause and effect and see the past. Pretty brilliant idea. Fictitious story around that, but it's a sort of a plausible idea. In the movie Altered States, the obsession of the main character, played by William Hurt, whose name, a fictional name, completely escapes me, is that he said, you know, I believe that mankind has the entire history of mankind and the universe back to original life in a chain of events in our DNA, in our memory. And he was taking drugs and going into deprivation tanks to try and regress himself back to the original moment of life. And in the third act, he got his way, and he was horrified by what he saw. Or, technically speaking, what he didn't see. And his wife sees him in the end. In the end, it's a love story. But there's no reason why, on some existential level, again, the mathematics that are far outside of our ability to consciously understand, that we might be able to push the effect of this cause and effect map forward, and so we could see into the future. Now, what is my huge question is that do we create the future, or do we merely experience the future? What does that mean? Well, for those of you who are familiar with the deterministic sort of approach of the universe, there are two schools of thought there. You have religious determinism, which is that God has written in a book everything that's supposed to occur. And then you sort of have your scientific determinism, which is this is just merely the way it is. The fear that comes into the rest of us who look at those theories is that we say, I want to think that I have choice. You don't want to believe you're an automaton. And no matter how creative you think you are, you are really just living out some pre-written script. But because you are ignorant to what the next step is, because we don't have consciousness developed to that level, we maintain this hubris that we are actually individual creatures and that we have our own thought processes. When you see a dumb person do something, it really hurts your feelings that perhaps that was something the universe wanted to have happen, right? Especially as they affect you. Drunk drivers hitting people in cars who are completely innocent. People reading cell phones and hitting people. We don't want to believe that we're connected to the stupidity. We don't want to be connected to that stupidity. We want those people moved to another dome, you know. I can tell you that I can see something that hasn't occurred yet, and I can see it in the most vivid, beautiful state of my current understanding of the senses. I don't get any extra senses, right? I don't see a sixth sense of any kind that I know of besides the ability to see this stuff. When I write a script, you know, it's like, I think it's what directors and writers go through is that they, the director is on set trying to get the scene into the camera that will eventually be composited into a movie, a television show, a story of some sort. And they look at the scene, they look at the performances, and they know the actors either hit it or didn't hit it. The beautiful thing is the hive mind of a group of people coming together to make a story happen, and everyone's starting to get it because the writers communicated beautifully to the director. The directors reinterpreted the writer's intent to a visual format, and they know how the actors should behave. And so they, you know, they'll direct. That's what they do. They direct human beings, and they say, well, you know, could you be a little bit more surprised? I want your eyes a little more open. Let's have a little more stress in your voice. You know, you're crying too much. You're not crying enough. All these different things. And they've simply made a profession out of seeing the future. But we don't acknowledge it that way. But that's what they're doing. They're creating the future. Very hands-on. Well, it shouldn't be much of a stretch to think that there's a format of this where you don't have your hands on things. But I'll tell you, it's like I've said in several episodes. If you don't ask a good question, you're not going to get a good answer, right? Ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer. You've heard that before, right? Ask a smart question, you get a smart answer. So to the degree that we believe that this is possible, we get the privilege of gaining this information because we know how to write the database query into the database. But if we do not have the ability to ask the question intelligently, what could possibly occur? Now, sometimes people will get utter epiphanies, and you never know. Could be a spirit on the other side is writing a great joke. They find a comedian that matches their style, and they go, boop, right? And the guy's at dinner with his wife, or you know, the girl's getting standing in line getting married, and all of a sudden the funniest thing occurs to either one of them, and they find a way to write it down. Tell the joke to someone else real quick. Don't let me forget this. Bah, bah, bah. So if you listen to the theories of remote viewing and it seems a little crazy to you, I would suggest it's kind of a nefarious practice by the government to spy on other people. Sure. Of course, it's always in the public eye, it's pitched as the matter of national security to figure out what the Ruskies are doing or something, right? In the end, it's providing bankers the technique of creating more elaborate wars in almost every sense of the use. Now, remote viewing is supposedly used by folks to find, you know, people who are missing people. But what's funny about it is I watched quite a few episodes on this on YouTube before making this episode, and it's interesting how people who claim that they're experts at this will kind of lean away from things that are really productive because maybe they're full of shit. Who knows, right? One woman talked about just almost a laughable example of using remote viewing where there was an earthquake somewhere, very serious earthquake. Rescue workers were missing. People were missing. And their big contribution to the puzzle was to determine where they were and whether or not they were alive or something like that. And it was anything that you would have been able to guess having heard that tiny little scenario on this show. And you go, well, there's a 50-50 chance they're alive or dead, so big odds on that one. And then the other one is, well, they're probably where they were last, you know. So if they're working on a particular building and that building fell down, well, they're probably around that building. And that's all this woman did was say, well, they're right by that building. Okay, well, that's last time we saw them, and you already knew that. So there's definitely a lot of posers out there that, again, usually are the folks that need a tremendous amount of attention. They've never acknowledged why they're special in normal ways, and so they've come up with this, you know, this fanciful way to be special. So we get a lot of, you know, astral projection people that don't have, you know, if you could astral project, do you realize what you could do? You could uncover every conspiracy in the world. You could astral project into Bilderberg meetings and come out with 100% accuracy of everything that was ever said in those rooms. Just make sure you're asleep when they're awake. And hell, the thing happens in Europe all the time. So Americans should be able to spy on Bilderberg meetings. So this was something that was super duper simple to do. That's, again, the astral projection people say, super simple. I astral project. I leave my body. I go to these specific locations. I can see, hear, taste, smell everything, right? It's not quite that awesome, but it's definitely being able to see and hear. Seeing is all you would ever need half the time, right? But we don't have that. We still have mysteries all over the universe. No one's making YouTube videos saying, well, I've astral projected into the hangars of Area 51, and this is exactly what I saw. And if you look on the satellite map, see that, that's this, and that's it. No one ever does that, right? We have this, this Planet X thing that, it's a bunch of attention getters online saying they've channeled people from Planet X, and again, their stories are as hokey as, you know, sort of a bad sci-fi novel out of the mid-1800s, you know. Coming here to enslave mankind, to mine gold. The gold is then used as a preservative to the atmosphere of Planet X because they can't live without gold in space. But they've got the ability to travel interstellarly. They've got the ability to engineer genetically mankind, but they haven't figured out common fusion to take mass and turn it into whatever the fuck they want, right? It's just absurd. So I think that's a bunch of bullshit. People selling doom. Wow. It's just like the Catholic Church. We convince you that God has abandoned you due to some hokey story of creation, you know, the Adam and Eve thing, the apple, and you're now punished by an infinitely brilliant creature. You couldn't see that coming, right? So what they do is these Planet X people, these, 2012 people, they tell you that the world's going to end, and boy, you need to come to them to get all the scoop on everything. If the world ends, then guess what? You don't have to pay any taxes, and you get to meet God right away, and all your relatives, and all that good stuff. So enjoy it. Don't fear it, right? The chances are it's a publisher trying to create a bunch of kind of New Age books at Barnes & Noble, so you'll buy them. It's trolls on YouTube trying to create a lot of, you know, view counts and steal your money from pre-roll ads and that kind of stuff. part of what validates the remote viewing to me is sort of unsubstantiated, which are the claims that these projects Stargate and all these other projects created by a computer just, you know, randomly associating words together, that they have been funded, that they were put together. But let me throw something else at you here. Now, I don't believe that Stargate was ever announced to the people, but imagine that someone comes up with this project. Let's just maybe even remote viewing slip out of our spectrum here. But they come up with some project in the United States of America, some intelligence level thing, and they're able to convince someone at the top that this is legit, or that we need to at least explore it because the commies are doing it, yada, yada, yada. Well, what happens when that happens? Money is allocated. And once money is allocated, well, then you can have a party, can't you? And so as long as you can do what Elon Musk does and says, look over here, I'm going to make this, I'm going to make that, and nothing ever seems to be profitable, nothing ever seems to be real, tons of, you know, ventures tank, but you get to play with billions and billions of dollars in the meantime, and you get to build up your own persona. If you're an Elon Musk, it doesn't even matter. You're a covert intelligence worker. If you can get the American public to sponsor something, or the selected officials to sponsor something, then you get to have a party for 10, 20, 30, 40, indefinite amount of years. So that's a cynical view of how covert projects of this nature could be created. And someone like a Jim Mars could either be exposing the truth of the talent, which again, I think we've established on this particular show that there is something to it. But if it was a fake, and the research came back, you know, like I think 23% is random accuracy. You know, if I took a deck of cards and I flipped every card up and you had to guess the suit or the color or even the number, you get about 23% correct. That's randomness. Now, I mentioned a long time ago, I'll just remind you that a friend I worked with, a woman who was a manager at a department in a company I worked in the Bay Area, her daughter was part of a Stanford experiment to see if kids were psychic. And according to her, it was a definite yes. And the older a child gets and the more they crush their brain with paradigms, the talent goes away. But the idea is to say, you know, when you see a baby, isn't it funny how babies sort of barely have any control over their body? The only thing they seem to be able to control outside of the autonomic body mechanisms to eat and excrete is they can kind of open their eyes, they can eat, they can suck on a tit, you know. And that's sort of what they're able to do. But their bodies are sort of wiggly things, right? And if you think about the current and the dye going through the current from the previous example, think about the soul merely infiltrating over the course of 6 months the extremities of the vessel that is the human body. And so what we're watching when we see a child wiggle as it's been born is that the soul is really penetrating the body and figuring out where all the pieces and parts are. Now, again, the body does gestate a baby for 9 months, but perhaps in some form there's more of a construction sequence going on until birth. You know, let's say 9 months, we generally consider a fetus having developed everything. The ears have moved around, the sex has been determined, et cetera, et cetera. And at that point, you start becoming who you are when you pop out. But whatever the timetable, that's currently my thought about why babies aren't, that human babies are very slow to crawl. You know, even 6 months is pretty quick. Walking, my kid walked in 9 months. So she was a fast tracker. You know, some kids don't get out of the crib for 2 years. Some kids don't talk for 3 years. I mean, it's really interesting how the body infiltrates, or the soul infiltrates the body, in my opinion. And there's no IQ related to either one. You could get up and walk at 6 months and be the dumbest kid on planet Earth, because it has to do with conditioning and intelligence transfer here on Earth. Maybe genetically the neural net in the brain is either more detailed because the parents weren't oppressed, educationally speaking, so their genes create denser neural meshes in the brain. It has nothing to do with race or anything. It just has to do with oppression, right? So the genetic curve, learning curve, is very real. The racial learning curve is not real unless you add the metrics of oppression. So you can go to a ghetto and find a bunch of dumb kids, but that's traced back to parents, and traced back culture, traced back how the parents might be really brilliant in the ghetto, but the kids turn out to be stupid because they're listening to music that makes them devoted to being ignorant. Which is why we have to change music, we have to change art, we have to reinvent art, for God's sakes. And just for those of you who don't live in Los Angeles, there's something called lowbrow art in Los Angeles, and it's sort of the edgy, super amazing artwork that's being created in the world. Everything that goes commercial, that's sold in galleries typically with, you know, names that everybody knows, those are more your highbrow art, but it's also sort of what you might call classical music at that point. Not bad, very impressive stuff, but no one's writing new stuff besides musical scores for movies. Your more alternate music is using instruments in ways that have never been, you know, thought of before. Remember, the electric guitar is less than 100 years old, but now take out all the music that was created with an electric guitar. A synthesizer, you know, all kinds of instruments that didn't exist, but they're indicative of previous inventions, right? The electric guitar uses a guitar construct to digitize the data and do something special with it. So I think remote viewing is huge. I think the way the government uses it is very sterile and probably more related to nefarious objectives. But I think we all do it. We all have done it. I think everyone who can hear my voice has done it. But you just didn't know you were doing it. And so what I want to encourage you to do as your homework is to, one, research your past. Go throughout your past and think about these moments when you've had epiphanies, when you've seen things. You know, I'm not talking about you being suspicious of your lover or sleeping with somebody else and you think, because you can see it vividly in your brain, it's happening. Don't do that to yourself, all right? Let's keep it in the fictional sense for a while until we really get a grasp on what is real and what isn't, because the worst thing you can do to any other human being is fill up the gap when they're not there, right? You imagine what someone is thinking about you, and it's completely incorrect, and so you sabotage your relationship by being very, you know, submissive when you don't need to, that kind of thing, right? Try to remember when you've imagined something that was creative in any way, shape, or form. And again, I just want to repeat this a few times throughout episodes, because you can repeat this to yourself if you're this kind of person, or you can repeat it to someone you know. Typically, people who are easily scared by movies, television shows, are people that will often say they're not very creative. Not always, but a lot of times they say they're not very creative. And the thing is that their creativity is off the chain. They're able to see, they're able to fictionally move that into their life and say, oh my God, I watched Walking Dead, so now I think zombies are coming after me. As if there's any fucking chance on the planet Earth that that's just one and the same. It's absurd. But they are the creative ones that think they're not creative, and it's hobbling their ability to watch, you know, Stanley Kubrick's remake of, or movie interpretation of The Shining by Stephen King. So I think that's about it. If you have any comments, we might end up doing a second part on this if I can find more data about it, but I think that's a pretty good rough of the concept. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. There's video and audio and a Facebook group. There's also Patreon. One of you guys is stuck on there for about a $5 donation a month, which is super cool. Any monies received from this, you know, go towards the production of the show. My goal was to create some sort of fun burst of cash that we could put into the show to get this camera to be 4K. But, you know, it's not imperative. It just makes things look a little more crystal clear for those of you who like the video. No sweat. I'm able to find time to do this sort of on my weekends and sort of my lunch breaks. So it all works out great. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. It gives you these longitudinal... That was for you, man.